This is the IBJ podcast for the week of August 23rd, 2021, brought to you by Resultant, formerly KSM Consulting. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Allow me to take you back to 2016. The location is the Garfield Park neighborhood, and specifically on Shelby Street, just south of the park proper. Big Car Collaborative, one of the city's most adventurous and innovative arts organizations, is preparing to unveil two major spokes in its long-term plan for moving the neighborhood forward. It has purchased two commercial buildings that it then transformed into multi-purpose art spaces. One of them, a former appliance repair shop, became known as Listen Here, a home for audio art installations and a new low-powered radio station, WQRT 99.1 FM. The second building, formerly used for manufacturing complex metal components, became known as the Tube Factory, serving as Big Car's headquarters and offering space for exhibitions, workshops, and meetings. And although it wasn't widely known at that time, Big Car also had purchased some nearby homes, which would become the core of a program to provide low-cost housing for artists. They could either lease a home at an affordable rate or take a 49% ownership stake. In either instance, they would agree to exchange this access to low-cost housing for providing their expertise or just another set of hands for Big Car's projects. For Big Car, this was a typically audacious move that followed its playbook of bringing large-scale art and design projects into public spaces in a very concrete way, and using its people, places, and programs to build community and social cohesion. Maybe more simply put, it wants to use art in big ways to bring people together and improve an area's quality of life. We're now 5 years into Big Car's investment in Garfield Park, and it seemed like a good time to check in and see what has come of it. IBJ's Susan Orr has a story in this week's IBJ about two upcoming elements of the Big Car campus, a multifaceted green space called Cruft Street Commons, and a 40,000 square foot former manufacturing facility that will be renovated and divided into artist studios and various multi-purpose spaces. The commons should be done in the fall, but Big Car still needs to do some fundraising for the full price tag on the second project. To take stock of the group's success and challenges so far in Garfield Park, as well as to get its read on the potential for gentrification in the area, I have turned to Jim Walker, Big Car's co-founder and executive director. Here's our conversation. I am happy to welcome to the podcast Jim Walker, co-founder and executive director of Big Car Collaborative. Thanks for making time, Jim.
Glad to. Thank you, Mason.
So you live in Garfield Park, right? You and your family?
Yes, we've been here since 2011. Before that, we were in Fountain Square since 2000.
And about how far away do you live from Cruft Street and the Tube campus?
So the park is there. So about a few blocks across the park. So we're on the north side of the park, and Cruft Street is on the south side of the park.
So how do you get to work every day?
It's a walk in the park. That's my commute. It's okay. Really what I do. I feel very fortunate that that's how I get to work. Two or three times a day. I go home for lunch. It's a very nice situation.
Well, I'm going to assume that you like walking. I know you're a bike rider. When you're just going around the neighborhood, the Garfield Park area, do you kind of log a sense of how it has changed in the last 6 years? I mean, has it appeared to have changed?
Yeah, some things we were part of, and some things happened alongside of the work we're doing, what we did was alongside of the work that people were doing. And the Red Line has made a big difference in terms of Shelby Street. It still has a ways to go. It's still a really fast, people still need to adjust to driving on a two-lane street with bus stations on the side and pedestrians walking across and things like that. But that's a big change from the way it used to be when it was really more like a four-lane, super crazy road. And, you know, on our block around here and in the homes, especially east of Shelby Street, there used to be a lot more vacant houses. And now that's not the case. So people are considering not only the area right on the park being the Garfield Park neighborhood, but also, you know, further out from the park. And then there's been a lot of great energy in the Bean Creek neighborhood, which is the next one to the east. And Tube Factory and the Krupp Street block is very fortunate that it's both neighborhoods kind of adopted that zone between the highway and Shelby Street from south of here to up to near Fountain Square. So we get to be in both neighborhoods, so both neighborhood organizations. And so we're very excited about what we see on the other side of the highway in Bean Creek, and then on the other side of Shelby Street, which is Garfield Park neighborhood.
So do you feel like you could directly attribute some changes in the neighborhood to what Big Car has been doing?
You can go back in time to before we had Tube Factory even. Several of us live in this neighborhood. A woman named Erin Schountz, who now works for the city in Department of Metropolitan Development. She's a deputy director with DMD. She worked at Big Car then and was a neighbor on Hervey Street, which is where we live. And we were working on things like the place that's now the Garfield Brewery was a vacant former gas station and then a restaurant. So we had a beer garden there, and we had music, and we activated it for the time. And now it's a brewery and a thriving local business that the neighbors really love. We also predicted narrowing Shelby Street down to two lanes and tested that out and made that happen to see that it would still function as a street through our neighborhood. So we were pushing things forward that came in as permanent changes and were taken over by other people who started their own business or brought their own things into the neighborhood. And so definitely as a way to get the ball rolling in a lot of different ways and to encourage people to walk more. You know, we were involved in supporting the farmers market when it first started, and it's a great thing. And it's, you know, we didn't start it, but we were here to offer support and help promote it. And, you know, and so a lot of these things have been happening. And when you see how people talk about the neighborhood and even how realtors might list a home in the neighborhood, they're going to talk about the park. They're going to talk about a lot of the things about the neighborhood that are these assets. And then they typically mention our existence here and the Tube Factory and the coffee shop, Normal Coffee, that we have inside Tube Factory as neighborhood assets that are here.
Wow. If the realtors picked up on it, then you know there's something happening.
Right. Yeah.
How were you guys involved in, you say testing, bringing Shelby down to two lanes for a point? How was that?
We did a thing called a Better Block. That was it's a program that happens all around the country, and it's an open source approach. There was one on Washington Street. We've had a few of them in our city. It started down in Dallas, but the idea is you go out and it's a thing called tactical urbanism, where it's basically like you try these tactics that are sort of strategic approaches to try out, to test ideas, to see if you can make long-term change. So it's kind of like putting in a temporary bike lane, putting in, you know, using street trees that are still in a bucket to show what it would be like if you had trees here instead of a driving lane. Just encouraging ways to put in temporary crosswalks, like going out and just painting your own crosswalk for the day where there should be a crosswalk. So that's the kind of stuff we did. The city was very supportive of those ideas, and there's no resistance to that stuff really, as long as you do it in a safe way. And so we've done a lot of that stuff where we've gone out and worked on things that were in city right away to test out ideas that later came in and happened. And we started doing a lot of that work when we were down on Monument Circle in a partnership with the city, where we were narrowing down the circle itself and increasing the pedestrian zone, like out in front of where Imus's offices are and all around the circle, basically, to see what would happen if it wasn't such a big, wide driving area. And then we saw, that was back in 2014, we saw that, hey, that it worked okay.
So what was the original vision when you decided to do the entire campus project? Big Car's headquarters would be located there. You would renovate the Tube Factory and the other Tube Factory. What was the mission? What was the original vision and what you hope to accomplish by doing all that?
Well, we've had a home base in Fountain Square. Then we had a space out at Lafayette Square. We lost that space. That was a temporary space that we were in for a few years. We were looking for a new place. Along the way, as we've done a lot of this work, we've gathered materials to go and do projects like these technical urbanism projects or the work on the circle. And then, so we needed a home base to operate out of, because there's a lot of things that we have to build. There's things we need to store. But we also wanted to have this, since this is our home neighborhood and several of the people who work here always live here or live in the neighborhood, live on the south side. So we thought this is a neighborhood that needed not only us to have a home base where we're going out and doing other stuff, but a home base where people could come and enjoy that space right in the neighborhood. And we were just looking around to find a replacement location from when we were in Lafayette Square. We knew that this was where we needed to go. We'd done the better blocks. We'd worked in vacant spaces that were here in the neighborhood. So when we just happened upon this old factory boarded up on a residential street down here on Krupp Street, and found out that the owners were interested in getting rid of it. They didn't. It was not working for what they do anymore. They're still, tube processing is still a very going concern based on up on LeGrand in Bates Hendricks. They have a big factory over there still, but they had kind of decided that these old buildings weren't going to work for them anymore. So they were very generous in allowing us to buy this first building affordably. They donated the big one to us later. They also owned 5 houses around here that we were able to get in an affordable way. So there was just, we just kind of happened upon this whole complex that was available and was just kind of mothballed. And they run a factory. They don't run an art space or a community. They're not community developers. So they didn't see the how this could be what it could be. No one probably did, except for we looked at it and we're like, yeah, this is perfect for what we need. The space is the same size basically as what we had at Lafayette Square. You have these homes around here that are vacant and boarded up that could be purchased for $5,000, $10,000 or whatever. And you can all of a sudden, basically with a lot of help and resources, but not with the kind of help and resources it would take to do something from scratch like this in the heart of downtown or in some place that is highly, where the real estate's super expensive. So we were able to work with a low entry point relative to other places, get a hold of a lot of this real estate. We worked with Riley Area Development, who knew what the people there knew what they were doing, had done all this work on Mass Avenue back in the days when Mass Avenue wasn't that as valuable as it is now. And so we were able to team up and get all hold of all that. We knew this neighborhood needed things. It has the park, but it doesn't have, you know, some of the spaces where people can gather recreationally. There's an art center in the park, but it's not the same thing as what we can do down here. So we've tried to come in and do things and offer things that weren't offered in our neighborhood, and to offer things that are also not really available in our city. And one of those things has been a need for exhibiting commissioned contemporary art. Like that you've seen changes at Newfields, you've seen changes in other places. The loss of the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art is gone now. So that has really shown us that there needs to be a place not only for art to be seen, but also for artists to be commissioned, paid to make work that may not be something they could sell in a commercial fashion, like in a gallery. So we can take more chances because we own this space, we control it, we don't have anything to worry about in terms of dealing with a landlord or our future here being in jeopardy, because this is our place and it belongs to us.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The right data and technology solution can transform your business. KSM Consulting is now Resultant and still passionate about solving problems no one else can. Still collaborating with our clients to find the best answer, not the easy answer. Visit Resultant.com to see what's possible for your organization.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. We're talking with Jim Walker of Big Car Collaborative about the group's investment and projects in the Garfield Park area.
For folks who haven't been in the Tube Factory building, just briefly explain what they would encounter when they go in there.
So you walk in the front door and there's a big open space. It's our community room, tables and chairs. It's a flexible space where all kinds of things can happen. So neighborhood meetings, movie screenings, people on Saturdays and Sundays. We're currently open 8 to 3 on Saturdays and Sundays. So you can come in, get a cup of coffee from Normal Coffee. That's the name of our coffee shop, and hang out, run into your neighbor, you know, work on something, get creative. That's in this space. And it's all windows. It's just really bright. It has skylights. It's like being outside. So if you have, you know, in the winter, it's a great place to come. If you have a seasonal affect disorder or whatever, and you want to be in some light. And so that's always light and bright here. Then there's a gallery in the back where we feature commissioned artworks. Some of it's by artists from here in town. Some of it's by artists from across the world. And we have a video room where people can see videos that are usually connected with the exhibit in the gallery. We have another exhibition space downstairs. That's the Jeremy Ephraimson Gallery. And that is more, usually features more commissioned work. Sometimes that gallery is closed depending on what we have going on. At the moment, we're in a lot of transition. So all of our art is upstairs. Our radio station's usually playing over the speaker inside of the building. And so you can listen to WQRT. So it's kind of everything is happening here. And then right outside, we have a very nice space for hanging out because we've tried to adapt to be ready for if the indoor spaces are having challenges. So that was funded through this restart grant that the Arts Council did with the Lilly Endowment support. So there's big awnings that are retractable. And for the moment, while we're working on our big green space, there's a bunch of chickens out there in a coop. So you can sit and have a cup of coffee, talk to the chickens under a nice awning, and relax.
Okay. Tell me about the Listen Here building.
Listen Here is the home of WQRT. It's down at the end of Cruft at Shelby Street. It's been our home for doing sound-based art exhibits and music programming. It's a smaller space, so it's been the one that hasn't opened back up. But the radio station's in there, and we have a lot of people in and out doing their own shows. So we have volunteer-based shows and all kinds of, it's this community station that is a really features pretty much everything from a show called Design Minded that Lee Alec and Steve Mannheimer do. That's kind of, you know, very smart discussions about urban planning and architecture and all that, to, you know, me doing a show of where I kind of put country music songs together just for fun, old country music. So you've got, you know, everything in between, jazz and artist conversations, just a whole variety of things. And some shows that we've been doing that were funded by Indiana Humanities, where we're featuring Indiana writers, people who were born in Indiana are writers. And then another series of shows that are connected to this study of utopias that we've been doing.
I have to say, that to me is like one of the neatest things about all this. It seems to me such a kind of audacious and bold thing to do, and something that, forgive me for saying this, outside the box. It, you know, during the pandemic, that is the way that I have interacted with Big Cars through the radio station. What does that do for a community, if anything, to have a radio frequency emanating from it?
Well, I think there's a lot of pride in it, in that for neighbors who are like, yeah, that station, that's our neighborhood station. The world is this thing that is global and then hyper-local, and that's how we look at it. So I grew up in Warsaw, and we had Northern Indiana. We had WRSW, which was our city radio station, and it had its issues and people would complain about it, but there was a lot of pride in that was our station, you know. So this is kind of our hometown within the bigger city, Garfield Park and Bean Creek. This is our hometown station, so we can share about things that are happening. And I think it's designed to build community also in who's in and out of there and who works together, you know. So you might have a person who's not so great at the technology who is teaming up with a person who's really good at technology, who's maybe a person who's like retirement age, partnered with a college student. And so there's ways that community is being built like that through these collaborations.
Now, another thing that would probably seem unusual to somebody who is just thinking about an arts group doing arts related things is the Artist and Public Life Residency Program. I don't know if that's what you still call it.
Yep.
Explain for folks who aren't familiar with it, what that is and what you're hoping to accomplish with that.
That is our affordable long-term artist housing. So that the housing is here to stay. We have 15 houses that we will not, that they're not just something we're going to flip or do for a little while and then turn into something else. The idea, just like how we have Tube Factory, it belongs to us. We want to have these houses that were here on the street on Croft and Nelson, the two streets on either side of the tube, that won't go and become so expensive that you can't live here as an artist. So this is a block. We knew we were going to change the block for the better in terms of no longer is there a vacant factory. There's a place where things are happening. So the houses that were all around here were also vacant. When you have all this vacancy, it drives down the property value for the people who are here, but also makes it more dangerous because you don't know what's going on inside a boarded up house. It just wasn't a good situation for the people who are here on the block. So we wanted to take care of that. And then we thought, well, what we're doing as an organization is working as artists who support community and are part of finding, you know, there's a challenge. How can we team up to solve that challenge or to at least address it? And so the artists who are moving into the houses exchange of the affordability that they receive and then other things being able to have resources that we have to offer here for their own participation in that same very same thing. And it can happen in this neighborhood. It can happen in other neighborhoods, other parts of the city. But this is a way to say, hey, you're doing good stuff in our city. Everybody who comes into this program as a resident is already doing that kind of work. So we're not saying, hey, can you start doing this? Because we know the best way to ensure that we're getting people in the homes who are a good fit for the programs, they're already doing that. So they are able to take some of the time that they have back, maybe because they don't have to have an extra job or they don't have to do all these things to pay super high rent or a higher mortgage. Because some of them are home owner homes, five of them, and the others are rental homes. It frees them up to have some more time to support the community through their work and to work together with each other. So this is planned together, not us planning for the residents, but all of us planning this together. How can we team up on things and how can we address some challenges or some opportunities that we see on our own block, in the neighborhood and beyond the neighborhood?
So here's a broad question for you. How's it been going?
It's been going okay. One challenge that COVID presented was a lot of people moved into that program right before or during 2020. So then the whole idea of building community and connecting with each other was very challenging. So when you're, you know, sometimes people say, well, are you in the art business? Or we're equally in, you know, like there, I forget what it was, what company used to say that they're like the people business, but like that, the art that we're doing is all about not materials like paint or wood or whatever. It's about working with people. And so that was a challenge. Then when you couldn't do that in a way that was safe and that made sense, the radio station really did save us during that time because it allowed us to interact in a way that didn't cause us to have to be in the same space physically. So coming out of that, it was going good and we were really feeling very positive. We hope that everything that continues to be the case because we really need to be and want to be open. We're also dealing with all this construction and the changes that are happening to the spaces down here. And so that's all happening at once. So we're kind of in this in-between space, like waiting for things to get back to a better place with the world and waiting for all these things to get finished down here so that we can open up.
Has there anything they've been doing up in the Garfield Park area just not gotten the traction that you thought it would?
Well, I think that the big, you know, what's probably going to end up being our most successful thing, it has been the artist housing, but that was, you know, we really, when you're working with people who are all kinds of different people and you're trying to put together something and you can't really be in place and your whole idea was for the work that the artists were going to be doing it through their public practice, which is with other people, it was really hard to say, well, what can we be doing now? And to address that and to, you know, to kind of handle that. So, you know, and that project, the houses are just now, you know, getting done and we're getting people in and getting close to, and that project also started in 2015. So that was 6 years to get a lot of that going. So it's a successful program now, but it was a long haul to get there. And it has a long way to go because there's just so many variables to it. So we really feel good about it. And we've received a lot of support for the housing. It's just, that was probably the one that having COVID in the middle of it really presented the most challenges.
I want to talk about one of the problems that is really inherent, you know, in these neighborhood renewal processes, it's gentrification. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way that often works out is artists move into an economically challenged area, generate some excitement, they build cultural cachet, other businesses follow, then demand rises for the real estate. And then soon the artists and the original residents are priced out. I mean, you could argue for sure that that happened in Fountain Square, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a potential for something like that to happen in Garfield Park as well?
Yeah, I think what is different about Garfield Park, one thing that's different, and this is one of the ways when you asked earlier about how have you been helping with things or how have you been having an impact? One of the things that we've tried to do as a different kind of, because really we are sort of a developer down here. We're a different kind of developer because we're not trying to make money. So that's a very different situation. Not very many developers don't want to make, they're not trying to make a profit or trying to make money. They have for good reason, like what kind of business would there be like that except for a nonprofit? And that's what we are. So one thing we've done is worked very, very hard to be very transparent and to talk with our neighbors who are here now and make sure they knew what was going on. So we've had conversations with neighbors on Craft Street who are like, hey, I'm going to sell you my house. I want to get out of here. I don't like, there's a crime issue or whatever it is. I want to get out of here. You want to buy my house? And then I say, well, you know what's going on. It's going to be a lot better. I think if you're iffy about this at all, you should stick it out because here's what's coming up. The red line's coming in. We own these houses around here. They're all not going to be vacant anymore. This green space is going to go over here. The big building in the back is getting fixed up. So this is what your neighborhood's going to look like in a few years if you stick it out. In another scenario in Fountain Square or wherever else, the developer's going to say, yeah, I'll buy your house from you for under its value now, especially not the future value. And then that owner leaves and they don't get what they could have gotten in 5 years. They get like pennies on the dollar. So that's been one thing we've been doing to make sure. So people aren't just bailing right before it switches into being this place that they had hoped to live in anyway. The other thing we're doing is keeping as many houses as we can affordable. So even in a neighborhood this size, like having 15 houses that are locked into affordability it's not enough to head off gentrification, but it's something. And it especially is in a concentrated area on our blocks. And so I feel like between those two things, existing neighbors thinking, I bet I'm not going to cash out and move to the suburbs. I'm going to stay because I feel good about what's happening here and working with the neighborhood to try to find as many ways as we can to keep it affordable. It can happen. And also this neighborhood, I feel like another key in that cycle you were talking about for gentrification is forces happening maybe through conspiracies to make a neighborhood hit rock bottom, like to let it go as far as it can until it's pretty much at the very bottom of its existence. Then you pick it back up after everybody has given up. And in some ways that kind of happened in Fountain Square, where it just was neglected for so long, let go. So many boarded up homes, just people could look at it and say, that place is hopeless. But it really wasn't. It was right by downtown, has a little, you know, its own little very cute downtown area with businesses. Like, it was ready to, for a revival or whatever, but it got let go all the way down. And this neighborhood never happened here.
Yeah, I don't know much about Garfield Park other than what I see when I ride my bike on Pleasant Run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it from what I've seen, then I wouldn't describe it as, you know, a destitute neighborhood by any means. I mean, there's a lot of good housing stock. You know, it's certainly a viable neighborhood right now.
Yeah. I mean, there were times when in Fountain Square and Fletcher Place, you could get a home given to you for a dollar or whatever. And there were lots of vacant houses over there around the park. The neighbors and the families and the community stuck together, even though this neighborhood lost some big things. St. Catherine's was the cornerstone of this neighborhood. It was the church here and the school where a lot of the neighbors who are here now went to school and went to church, and that got torn down, and a CVS is there now, sadly. And, you know, that was devastating for this neighborhood. And a lot of the commercial businesses that used to be up and down Shelby, they're all gone. You know, you would have had bakeries and Italian restaurants and Irish bars and all this stuff. And, you know, this stuff that all went away. But the neighbors who grew up here, their families stuck it out, and a lot of other people came in behind them and said, you know, we're going to really hold our ground in this neighborhood, and we're not going to let it hit rock bottom or go downhill. And you don't have the kind of vacancy and neglect of homes. It's people wouldn't put up with it.
So is this going to be Big Car's permanent home?
Yeah, no doubt. Like, so we own all this. We're putting so much investment in this with all these supporters, Lilly Endowment, Alan Whitehill Clues, Ephraimson Family Funds, all the CICF support we've received, Herbert Simon Family Foundation, the Glicks. So their investment is going into this, and it's a forever situation. This is not going to be, we're not going to move anywhere else. What we don't know is what we're going to do away from here. You know, so we're doing some work in other places. We work with CityMark, the developers that own and they own all of the properties around Needler's Market on Lockerbie Square. So we do programming down there with them. We're working with the new owners of the Stutz building. We do work in various places around the city. So our future question is, how much of that stuff are we going to keep doing? How many opportunities are there for other people who might be interested in doing that kind of work? You know, maybe our future is to even be more focused on our home base here. I mean, that's how it's going, really. And everything we have is here, and the radio station's here, and we don't need to go anywhere else because we have all the stuff here. And there are so many more organizations doing things in other parts of the city that didn't used to exist when we started, you know, back 15 years ago. So that's very encouraging, but we don't, if anything, we're going to put more energy and more focus into Garfield Park and this as our permanent home. And, you know, it's a big thing and as our community continues to see growth and improvement down on the South Side, we see this as a regional attraction too and beyond, you know, so people can come and visit us from all over when they come to see our city. And you can get here from downtown very easily on the Red Line, or like you do, that you can get a Pacers bike share bike and ride down here. There's a station you can put your bike at Southern and Shelby, right over across the street from here. So it's easy to get to from downtown. It's a place that tourists can visit. I've done a lot of traveling around art spaces. You're not going to find a place like this. There are elements of this in other places, but this is a pretty unusual situation.
Okay, well, let's check back in 18 months or so and see how the new tube factory is coming. And hopefully we'll be done with the virus and be able to get together.
I hope everybody can, we can have a big crowd in there hanging out and having fun.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mason.
My thanks again to Jim Walker. Again, IBJ's Susan Orr has more details on Big Car's plans for renovating the 40,000 square foot tube factory building and finishing Cruft Street Commons in the latest issue of IBJ. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories I want to bring to your attention. Indianapolis leaders want to encourage denser development near the city's bus rapid transit lines and to deprioritize cars, so they've changed zoning laws to help make that happen. Mickey Shuey and Leslie Bonilla Muniz explain how planners are flipping the script on 1960s era development. Also in this week's issue, Kurt Christian details how Carmel's Center for the Performing Arts has ended its past two seasons in the black, despite the pandemic stranglehold on its primary revenue stream. And Marcus Miller reports that the state is launching a $275 million effort to improve its image by overhauling 16 interstate rest stops. Again, you can read all these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.